Dr. Bryant, I am so excited to have you on this segment of a Regenerative Medicine Summit, and we're going to be talking about some pretty kind of groundbreaking things that a lot of people are not aware of, and I'm really excited about it.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to see you.
Well, let's kind of let the audience know all the things that you've been involved in. You earned your undergraduate Bachelor of Science degree in biochemistry from the University of Texas at Austin, and your doctorate degree from Louisiana State University School of Medicine in Shreveport, where you were the recipient of the Dean's Award for Excellence in Research. Pursued your postdoctoral training at the Kirstein Fellow at Boston University School of Medicine and the Whitaker Cardiovascular Institute. After a two-year postdoctoral fellowship in 2006, you were recruited to join faculty at the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston by Farid Mirad. He's a 1998 Nobel Laureate in Medicine or Physiology. Dr. Bryant's been involved in nitric oxide research for the past 20 years, so a long time, and we're just now finding out about it, pretty much. Has made many seminal discoveries in the field. His many seminal discoveries have resulted in dozens of issued U.S. and international patents, and the product technology resulting from his discoveries and inventions has improved patient care worldwide. Dr. Bryant is a successful entrepreneur and founder of Human N, Inc., and also Pneumo Nitric Oxide, LLC, and Nitric Oxide Innovations, LLC, and Bryant Nitroceuticals, LLC. His product technology is responsible for hundreds of millions of product sales worldwide. Most recently, Dr. Bryant serves as founder and CEO of Nitric Oxide Innovations, LLC, a privately held clinical stage biopharmaceutical company that is actively engaged in the discovery and development of nitric oxide therapies. Their lead drug candidate, Novirucid, is currently in phase 3 clinical trial for the treatment of COVID-19 in African Americans and Hispanics. Dr. Bryant is an international leader in molecular medicine and nitric oxide biochemistry. You have been busy.
It's been a journey, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So how was it to work? I mean, here you have somebody that's won the Nobel Prize. I mean, how was it to work with such a gentleman? I mean, that must have been incredible.
Well, you know, it was really an electric atmosphere. You know, you learn a lot from people who are innovators and have made really world-changing, life-changing discoveries. And so I think, you know, it's contagious and so it's passed on. But, you know, they knew long ago that nitric oxide was important. Obviously, in 1998, a Nobel Prize was awarded. So, you know, they discovered the importance of nitric oxide and how it's produced in the body. You know, and I've kind of created a name for myself and become famous for creating a solid dose form of this gas that actually replenishes and repletes nitric oxide inside the human body. So it's been an honor to continue the science and really to advance it to a stage where we can actually apply this in clinical practice.
Yeah, it's incredible. And nitric oxide before 1998, I mean, what kind of role did it have? I mean, did we even think that it played a role in the body?
Well, you know, even then, you know, it was recognized that it's the molecule that's produced in the lining of the blood vessels that regulates blood flow and circulation throughout the body. So it was at that time considered a vasodilator, meaning that it opened up the blood vessels and improved circulation and oxygen. But fast forward, you know, 20, 25 years, we now know that it's much more than a vasodilator. It's what controls, you know, protein structure and function and oxygen delivery and glucose uptake and exercise performance and mitochondrial biogenesis. It's responsible for mobilization of our own stem cells, which is obviously extremely relevant and important for the Regenerative Medicine Summit. It's responsible for the prevention of the telomeres, the ends of the chromosomes that, you know, get shorter with each cell division and basically predict lifespan. So everything we know about longevity and wellness and really the metrics of life, of how well we live and how long we live, revolves around the production of nitric oxide.
So for people listening, I mean, obviously you're thinking then, well, how can nitric oxide, how can this improve my life? I mean, how is that going to impact me? And it sounds like it kind of bleeds into so many different things. So what would you say to people out there that this is the reason why you need to really pay attention to nitric oxide? I mean, I want to go into all these different things that you kind of read off that it does, because all these are huge subjects, but just so that people can relate to it a little bit better.
Well, the broad kind of take home message is your body cannot and will not heal or perform optimally without nitric oxide. So if you want to perform better, if you're like, you know, you and me, and we're healthy and we want to stay healthy, then nitric oxide is extremely important in allowing your body to prevent the onset and progression of disease. Or if you're sick, like most Americans, and are trying to get well when medical treatment has failed you, then nitric oxide should be the solution you're looking for, because every major chronic disease is characterized by loss of nitric oxide production. And when you lose nitric oxide, what happens? Well, you lose regulation of blood flow, so you have low circulation, poor circulation. You have inflammation, immune dysfunction, and oxidative stress. Those are the hallmarks of every single chronic disease. It doesn't matter if it's cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's, diabetes, autoimmune disease, pulmonary disease, kidney disease. The common denominator in all those is loss of nitric oxide, inflammation, oxidative stress, and immune dysfunction. And the beauty of what nitric oxide is and does is it's self-correcting. So if we can replete and replenish the production of nitric oxide, blood flow improves, circulation improves, inflammation goes down, oxidative stress goes down, immune dysfunction is mitigated. So it corrects every single aspect of chronic disease.
Yeah, because obviously, I mean, one, I mean, we need nutrients and oxygen to get to locations, and that's right. Where we have circulation. So if all the highways and all the roads are blocked, then obviously we're not going to get anywhere. So now the cells are starving just based upon that. And then you're talked, so we have that component is obviously important. And then inflammation, I mean, we know inflammation plays a role in I would say the majority of all diseases. I mean, inflammation is just there. We look at cancer, look at aging, look at MS, autoimmune conditions, look at diabetes, you name it, and it's there. And then just in the regenerative aspect, yeah, we have the term inflammaging, you know, which we know that we're aging faster when we're inflamed. And then, you know, the mitochondrial aspect, the immune system regulation, stem cell. I mean, so these are huge factors. So tell me a little bit kind of how can a molecule that's just, you know, it's just it's just NO, you know, it's just two components, two atoms. How can that do so much in the body?
Well, it's a very good question. And that really was kind of what intrigued scientists for many years, because it's a signaling molecule. It tells the body what to do from many different aspects. So in terms of inflammation, it basically downregulates the adhesion molecules on the lining of the blood vessel and prevents, you know, the vascular inflammation where the monocytes and T cells start rolling and adhering and extravasate through and elicit an immune response. So all of that is mitigated by nitric oxide. But it's also part of our, you know, innate immune system. It kills bacteria, it kills viruses. And so it's a gas that just freely diffuses. So it can go anywhere and basically regulate and signal many different aspects of biology. And we're learning more about how this molecule signals every day, every week. You know, there's over 180,000 papers published in the scientific literature. So we know a lot, but there's still a lot we don't know. And so that's what makes this area of research such a, you know, a treasure trove of discovery.
So it actually, I mean, and I know you're doing kind of working on a nitric oxide drug in regards to COVID, and COVID, you know, we know is a vascular disease, right? Where you have kind of that inflammation, that upregulation of the immune system. So that would be then one of the functions in regards to kind of the monocytes and how they adhere to the lining of the blood vessels. And so if we can regulate that more appropriately, then obviously we will not have these kind of clot formations, and we will also not kind of the transport of oxygen through the membrane of the blood vessels will be appropriate, meaning that the tissue are able to get the oxygen, you know, because it's not inflamed from the immune system attacking the lining of the blood vessels.
Yeah, that's right. So we recognized early on, probably in March or April of 2020, that the people that were getting sick and dying from COVID were the people who couldn't make nitric oxide. These were the elderly African Americans with a previous heart attack, diabetes, obesity, smoking, kidney disease, lung disease. So the problem was when you're exposed to pathogen, and COVID is really no different than any other respiratory virus, right? We attaches to the airway epithelium, and then our immune system goes to the site, recognizes a foreign pathogen, and then we generate a lot of nitric oxide, keep the virus from replicating, and we don't get sick. But in people who have poor circulation and can't make nitric oxide, you don't elicit an immune response. So the monocytes don't get to the site of infection or the attachment. The virus replicates, propagates throughout the body. The spike protein causes vascular inflammation, causes platelets to aggregate, and upregulation in D-dimer, and you get systemic disease. So every aspect and etiology about COVID-19 can be explained by a simple loss of nitric oxide production. So it made sense to us, if we can initiate early stage nitric oxide therapy within 72 hours of onset of COVID symptoms or exposure, then we can prevent this whole proliferation of disease, prevent the loss of blood oxygen saturation, keep people out of the hospital, keep them off a mechanical vent. If you can do that, you can keep people alive. And that's exactly what our drug study was showing for the past 2 years. But to the so those are the really sick people. You know, I'm probably the best example of how our immune system deals with respiratory virus. So obviously I've been exposed to COVID. I've been on an airplane every week since probably June of 2020. We had 26 clinical sites for our COVID drug study. So I don't wear a mask typically unless I was absolutely forced to, but yet I've never had COVID. And I've never been sick from a viral infection in more than 20 years. So we're exposed to viruses every day, respiratory viruses, seasonal influenza, COVID-19. But if your body is primed and your immune system is functional and your circulatory system is functional and your body can generate nitric oxide, then our immune system deals with it, and it kills it at the site of infection. It nips it in the bud, and it doesn't propagate throughout your body, and you don't get sick. So this is exactly how our immune system is designed to work. So in this, obviously, there's no need for vaccines. There's no needs for any type of mRNA genetic manipulation. You just got to allow your immune system to do its job.
Yeah, because it obviously the key is the appropriate immunomodulation, meaning that you rely on the intelligence of the immune system. And by doing that, you want to give it the maximum amount of tools that it need to be able to function efficiently. And like you're mentioning, is that, you know, COVID, you know, that are the extreme cases, you know, end up in the hospital, you know, put on a ventilators, you know, so that is kind of an extreme, but we are just like you in your situation. We are exposed to these all the time, and how our immune system is responding to it determines whether we are put in that kind of inflammatory state where the immune system is hyperactive, maybe not to a disease state, but we're kind of in that inflamed, hyperinflamed state that promotes aging or promotes like an autoimmune condition. But if we can then kind of make the immune system more efficient, clear out the virus, and then also then tell the immune system you don't need to adhere to these places and calm down, you know, we got this, then we don't have to worry about these other conditions that are in themselves becoming pandemics, you know, like all the autoimmune and so forth.
Yep. Now, look at whether, I mean, obviously, we've learned a lot over the past 3 years about the role of nitric oxide in our immune system and infectious disease, but it regulates every aspect about health and wellness. So if we can just simply restore, so number one, we got to figure out, and we discovered this many years ago, how the body makes nitric oxide, what goes wrong in people that can't make it, then how do we fix that? So, you know, we can very proudly report now that we know the answers to all these questions. So now the question is, really the challenge is, how do we get this in the hands of physicians and healthcare practitioners so they can apply it into their clinical practice? Because, you know, I'm a basic scientist who does research and discovery, but this research and discovery means nothing if it never reaches patient care and the people on the front line treating patients, seeing patients every day. We have to be able to translate these discoveries into clinical practice. And I think that's why this is so important and what you do and other clinicians and really trying to educate the community at large on the importance of nitric oxide. Mm-hmm.
And so, and I want to kind of get into that a little bit more later on, but I really want to kind of establish that people really can understand the value of nitric oxide and why it's so needed. So obviously, I mean, heart disease, cardiovascular disease is the number one killer. And if we can then keep our blood vessels healthy, then, you know, which is nitric oxide plays a tremendous role in that aspect, you know, not only as a vasodilator, but then reducing the inflammation along the blood vessels, which will then reduce the need for plaque and atherosclerosis and all these things to kind of build up, because that is just as a response to the inflammatory, you know, condition along the blood vessels. So if you can control that inflammation, which nitric oxide does, then there's less need for the buildup. And also then obviously we won't move towards heart disease in any shape or form. So we have that component. And then also for the immunomodulation, you know, we have that as well. But then we have things like, you know, you talked about stem cells, and then also things like neurotransmission, you know, where you have neurotransmitters and in the brain, you know, with, you know, people dealing with, I mean, stroke and all of that makes sense, you know, because of the circulation, but then also things like Parkinson's and ALS and all things that has to do with neurotransmitters being appropriately, you know, sent between gaps, you know, from one nerve cell to another, you know, it plays a role in those areas as well, correct?
No, absolutely. So, you know, in order for cells and tissues to function, you have to get the good stuff in and take the bad stuff out. So there's a vascular component to every major chronic disease. And really, I like the work of Dr. Daniel Amen, because he's shown very clearly that all brain disease, neurological disease, is characterized by reduced blood flow. So whether it's Parkinson's, ALS, bipolar, chronic traumatic encephalopathy from post-concussion, or vascular dementia, Alzheimer's, there's a disruption in the blood flow to certain regions of the brain. And when you don't perfuse those regions of the brain, then you don't get these neurotransmitters released. You get dysregulation of the communication and develop neurological symptoms. So if you can restore blood flow, get the oxygen, the nutrients, the amino acids, the signals you need for neurotransmission, and then you can take out the metabolic waste product, then the human body heals itself. It does its job and everything takes care of itself. And I think that's why all Alzheimer's drugs have failed, because these drug companies are going after the consequence of disease rather than the cause. The beta amyloid plaque and the tau tangles of Alzheimer's are a consequence of insufficient blood flow. So you get buildup of the metabolic waste. These present as tau tangles and amyloid plaque. So it's a consequence of disease. It's not the cause of disease. And that's why these drugs fail. What we do is completely different. We understand the etiology of disease to the extent that we can fix it. We understand the root cause. We improve vascular blood flow, oxygen nutrient deliveries to every cell in the body. And then the body's regenerative by nature. We mobilize stem cells. You can go and replace and replenish dysfunctional cells. And we regenerate. I mean, that's so aging is really not, it's, you know, we're wearing ourselves out every day, right? Aging is just the inability to repair and replace dysfunctional cells. And that's controlled by our own stem cells, which are controlled by the production of nitric oxide. So if we restore nitric oxide, the stem cells get the signal, we go and replace and replenish dysfunctional cells, and we regenerate, and yet we don't age. At least we can't do anything about the chronological aging process, but we can certainly do something about our biological age.
Yeah, and the key is, I mean, we are living longer now than we used to, you know, throughout history. And so, but the issue is that because we are living longer, we're then dealing with a lot of these diseases that are related to aging. So now we have then a longer time that we are in essence suffering, you know, because we are not recognizing the need to address these diseases, you know, to connect it with aging, like Alzheimer's, dementia, you know, any kind of inflammation, you know, cardiovascular, arthritis, you know, all these things. So it is then important to really recognize that you need to start to kind of take care of yourself early and recognize the importance of blood circulation. And you shouldn't wait until you start to develop symptoms, because when you develop symptoms, that means that the body has tried to compensate for many, many years, and then all of a sudden it says, I give up, you know, and now I'm just gonna let you have it. And then you're symptomatic.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, that's how Western medicine is, right? It's a reactive approach. So people don't make changes until they're in a crisis. And I always tell people, look, it's much simpler and much more affordable to prevent disease than it is to treat it. So our body's constantly telling us and reminding us, hey, something's not right. And if you don't listen to your body and you wait too late, then and symptoms and disease ensues, then it's much more difficult to get better. So it's easier to prevent than it is to treat. And so people have to understand that. We have to change the way we think, and we have to change the way that medicine's practiced in the US from a reactive practice to a proactive practice. And I think when we do that, when and only when we do that, will people start to live longer and live better. Because people are living longer now, but they're certainly not living better. They're just living with chronic disease and under the care of you know, a healthcare system that fails them through drug therapy.
Yeah, and the way the elderly are taken care of, it's exactly that. I mean, they're just drugged down and they're just put in homes, you know, where they're not really cared for that well. And so it is important to do everything that we can when we can, when we're as young as possible, to make sure that we can increase our health span, we can have our independent living for as long as possible until, I mean, we are going to die, but let's live well until we do. And that's why something like nitric oxide is such a phenomenal tool in that process. I mean, you all almost call it you call it the most important molecule in the body. And it's because of all the signaling mechanisms, you know, that the intelligence that it brings to the rest of the body.
That's right. Yeah, and my dad constantly reminds me, and it's a good reminder. He says, if I'd have known I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. Right. So we have to constantly remind that, like, nobody gets out alive. But, you know, like my good friend, Dr. Joe Maroon says, I want to live as long as possible, but die as young as possible. Right. So it's really about our lifespan and how well we live throughout our entire life until our day of expiration.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned like the stem cells. I mean, they only function, so they kind of hang out in our body, but they only function as well as they are instructed to do, meaning that there needs to be appropriate communication telling the stem cells that, hey, we need help over here, and this is the activity that needs to take place. And nitric oxide plays a huge role in that communication so that the stem cells can have appropriate action in the areas that needs to be regenerated.
No, that's exactly right. You know, it was discovered, I think, back in 1996 that nitric oxide is the signal that tells our own stem cells to mobilize and differentiate. So, you know, we have stem cells all over our body, in our bone marrow, in our fat tissue. You know, they're circulating around. They're just kind of waiting. They're the army that's waiting to get the signal to go and repair and replace. And nitric oxide is that signal. So if your body's compromised in its ability to make nitric oxide, it's not that you've lost the number of stem cells. You've lost the function of those stem cells. So then, and we've published on this, you know, several times in several clinical studies where, you know, you take people with chronic disease or even inborn errors in metabolism, and then we give them nitric oxide, we see a mobilization of the stem cells, endothelial progenitor cells, and they basically repair and regenerate their tissue. Heart disease goes away, kidney disease goes away, plaque in their blood vessels goes away. simply by doing nothing more than restoring the production of nitric oxide.
That's amazing. And so would nitric oxide, I mean, is there, because I know with certain hormones, they decrease with aging. And genetically, we are designed to obviously, I mean, we're like a clock that's winding down, you know, so genetically, we're designed to kind of at some point die. And with that, then functions are then slowing down. So is nitric oxide then being depleted, or is it less when you're older than when you're younger? Is that the case?
Well, there's two ways the body makes nitric oxide. So the first pathway to be discovered was through an enzyme found in the lining of the blood vessels called nitric oxide synthase. And this enzyme converts arginine to nitric oxide. And we call this endothelial function. So if you have good endothelial function, then when you're endothelial cells are stimulated, they can generate nitric oxide. When we develop what's called endothelial dysfunction, that means that when you get a signal or when you stimulate or activate nitric oxide production, the enzyme doesn't work and it can no longer convert arginine to nitric oxide. So it's that pathway that becomes dysfunctional with time. So by the time we're 40 years old, we'll only make about 50% of the nitric oxide through that pathway as we did when we were younger. But now there's a recognized compensatory, kind of a secondary pathway that can overcome endothelial dysfunction. And interestingly enough, that happens through nutrition and diet. And so there's what's called the nitrate, nitrite, nitric oxide pathway. So you get nitrate from green leafy vegetables. This molecule is metabolized by oral bacteria. And then we swallow that and it generates nitric oxide gas. So you can overcome endothelial dysfunction and overcome nitric oxide deficiency from that pathway through repletion through the diet. But what happens is if people have endothelial dysfunction and they have a poor diet or they're not getting the nitric oxide produced from the oral microbiome and through stomach acid secretion, then you become globally nitric oxide deficient. And these are the people that have high blood pressure, erectile dysfunction, full-blown cardiovascular disease, vascular dementia, Alzheimer's, diabetes, every major chronic disease we deal with today can be explained by a complete loss of nitric oxide production.
So it almost sounds to me that it's kind of a, it has a domino effect. I mean, because when you don't have enough nitric oxide, then your blood vessels, the lining of your blood vessels gets inflamed. And because they are inflamed, you produce even less nitric oxide. So it just has that negative cascading effect, and where it just gets worse and worse. So it then becomes extreme. In order to be able to then reverse that, the only way seems to be then through dietary changes and making sure that you maximize and this alternative pathways and through the food that you're eating.
That's correct. And so when we set out to develop novel and innovative nitric oxide-based therapies or product technology, our whole premise was, if your body can't make nitric oxide, then we have to do it for you. So similar to like if you're, you know, the best example is probably hormone replacement. And if your body is not producing these hormones because of age-related effects, then obviously you replete them through shots or through creams or through troches or things like that. So that was our philosophy with nitric oxide. If your body can't make it, then we have to do it for you. And that's the basis of our nitric oxide delivery system through an orally disintegrating tablet. When you put this lozenge in your mouth, it generates nitric oxide gas. In fact, it's the only technology in the world that does this. So if your body can't make it, we make it for you. But more than that, we understand now the enzymology and biochemistry of the enzyme in the lining of the blood vessel that we can now recouple and restore the function of that enzyme. So we're doing two things. We're providing an exogenous source of nitric oxide that patients typically can't make. But then we're providing the components that recouple the NOS enzyme, restore endothelial function, so their body's own ability to make nitric oxide is restored. And you see remarkable effects when that happens.
So what are some of the effects? Because that's kind of the point that I was making is right. That it just has this negative, you know, downward spiral. And you need something to be able to kind of bring it back so that you can restore that function. And then to be able to have a tool like that to restore the function so that your blood vessels can start to produce, you know, the lining is functioning appropriately so that you can produce a nitric oxide over there. So what are some of the effects that you've seen? I mean, you've sold, I mean, what was it, 100 million? I mean, there was like millions all over the, yeah, it's all over the world. Yeah, millions of, you've done a lot. So what are some of the effects that you're seeing from people?
Well, number one, we see a normalization of blood pressure. You know, 2 out of 3 Americans have an unsafe elevation in blood pressure, which is the number one risk factor for cardiovascular disease, the number one killer. So that's a very important. Number two, we see a reduction in inflammation. So one of my issued patents is on a method of lowering inflammation. We see a reduction in triglycerides, and triglycerides are really the components of the lipid panel that are inflammatory. So total cholesterol, LDL, HDL, all of that is meaningless in terms of cardiovascular risk, but it's really your triglycerides. So one of my patents is on a method of reducing triglycerides. We're seeing an improvement in glucose uptake and insulin signaling. So really critically important in insulin resistance and really metabolic syndrome. I mean, metabolic syndrome is you have, you know, diabetes, insulin resistance, hypertension, and hyperlipidemia in terms of triglycerides. So nitric oxide hits the trifecta. We normalize blood pressure, we improve glucose uptake and improve insulin signaling, and we lower triglycerides. That alone is life-changing in terms of affecting a very high-risk population for developing heart attack and stroke. We improve exercise performance. You know, we've got products that can allow you to adapt to high altitude. You know, part of the adaptive response to low oxygen and altitude is to improve nitric oxide production to allow you to better deliver oxygen at a lower partial pressure at altitude, so you don't get altitude sickness, you don't get mountain sickness, and you certainly don't develop high altitude pulmonary edema, which is sometimes deadly. So every aspect about what we do and what nitric oxide does affects every major consideration for chronic disease.
Yeah, and that's huge. And so kind of going back a little bit, because I was so fascinated with this other pathway and kind of the, for people to understand what kind of food that is important in order to be able to maximize that pathway, and what people do normally that will interfere with that pathway to function optimally. So tell me a little bit about that, because that is such a huge piece of information for people to understand.
Now, it's critical, and this is probably the most common jaw-dropping response I get when people understand this, right? Because we know that diet can affect many different chronic diseases, right? In fact, I mean, diet is probably the most important consideration in all diseases. So what we've discovered is that there's a molecule called nitrate that's found primarily in green leafy vegetables. So things like spinach, arugula, kale, celery, things like that. And then this molecule, once we consume these vegetables, 90 minutes after we consume it, our body takes it out of our gut and puts it in our salivary glands. So now after that meal, for the next 6, 8, 10 hours, each time we salivate, we're secreting nitrate. And then the bacteria that live in the crypts of the tongue, there's some what we call nitrate reducing bacteria. And then these bacteria metabolize nitrate into nitrite. This is a 2-electron reduction reaction. So now our saliva is enriched in nitrite, and I developed a salivary test strip back in 2010 that can detect salivary nitrite and the body's ability to metabolize these nitrates from the diet. And then when we swallow our own saliva, now we get a burst of nitric oxide gas in the lumen of the stomach. So all that fuels endogenous nitric oxide production, endogenous nitric oxide signaling. So what we have to do now is we have to kind of check some boxes at each step of the way, right? So the first is, are you getting enough nitrate from your diet? And we published in 2015 that the standard American diet is deficient in any nitrate, right? So just as most Americans are deficient in things like magnesium and selenium and chromium, we're nitrate deficient. Mm-hmm. And it's basically impossible to know if you're getting enough, because, you know, in 2015, we published a paper showing that there are regional differences in the nitrate content of vegetables. So whether you live in Los Angeles, Dallas, Chicago, New York, or Raleigh, and there's as much as 100-fold difference in the amount of nitrate in celery, for example. So one, we're nitrate deficient. Number two is 2 out of 3 Americans use mouthwash every single day. 200 million Americans wake up and use mouthwash. And that's destroying the oral microbiome. It's disrupting this nitric oxide production pathway. And people get high blood pressure. They lose the cardioprotective benefits of exercise. They develop sexual dysfunction. And all of that can be traced back to the use of mouthwash. So, and the other...
Because you're talking about the bacteria. So you actually want the bacteria there in your mouth hole, because that bacteria is the one that change then the nitrate into nitrite.
That's right.
And then when we swallow the nitrite, it then becomes nitric oxide in the stomach.
Provided there's stomach acid. And that leads us to the next problem. And that's the use of antacids. You know, there's 200 million prescriptions written for antacids every year. And that's not even counting the over-the-counter purchases. So these drugs are extremely dangerous. In fact, they were never approved for chronic use. But you know, I know people who have been on PPIs and antacids for 10, 12, 15, 20 years. And now there's clear evidence, paper published, I think, in 2016, that people who had been on antacids for 3 to 5 years had about a 40% higher incidence of heart attack and stroke. So these drugs are causing heart attack and stroke because they're disrupting nitric oxide production. So now you got to ask yourself, what do I need to do, right? So if you're using mouthwash, you have to stop. Get rid of fluoride in your toothpaste. Fluoride's an antiseptic. It's killing the bacteria in your mouth. It's a neurotoxin and it's killing your thyroid function. And by the way, you got to get rid of fluoride in your drinking water, the water coming into your home. Fluoride is probably one of the most toxic molecules on the periodic table. And yet it's in our toothpaste. It's in our water supply that we're drinking, that we're cooking in, that we're bathing in. You got to get rid of fluoride. And then two, if you're on an acid, you have to figure out how to get off antacids, because your body cannot and will not heal without stomach acid production, because it's part of the nitric oxide production pathway. And then you've got to get enough nitrate in your diet. And that's a very challenging kind of aspect. And so we know how to do this. We've created product technology that basically overcomes all these deficiencies. So when all else fails, you know, we have product technology that does it for you. But we encourage people just to change their lifestyle. Stop doing the things that disrupt nitric oxide production and start doing the things that promote it. Throw in some more green leafy vegetables, moderate physical exercise, 20 to 30 minutes of sunlight exposure a day or infrared light therapy, and the body starts to heal itself.
And that was a point I wanted to kind of hear as well. So the infrared helps with the production of nitric oxide. So obviously then being out in the sun, kind of a skin exposure to sun, helps also then with the production of nitric oxide.
Well, it can. You know, there's certain wavelengths of light, both on the UV side of things and in the, really it's full spectrum infrared, that will release nitric oxide bound to, so the UV light will cleave NO bound to a cysteine pile. Right, so that's a covalent bond. You need a higher energy to do that. Infrared provides a frequency that releases nitric oxide that's bound to metals, right? So there's a limit of diffusion of those wavelengths into the tissue, whether it's direct sunlight exposure or whether it's infrared. But the challenge has been, or the consideration is, you have to have these photolabile stores in order to be released by light. But in people that are nitric oxide deficient, there's less nitric oxide, so there's less nitric oxide bound to thiols or less nitric oxide bound to metals. So there's less nitric oxide to be liberated by light therapy. So what we've found in a number of clinics that use light therapy or red light is if you pre-treat these patients with nitric oxide and then expose them to infrared light therapy, you're going to get more clinical benefits of the light therapy, because we've titrated up these photolabile stores that when you hit it with light, you're releasing a lot more nitric oxide than you would had they not repleted or titrated up these stores. Mm-hmm.
And the PPI, I mean, it was fascinating, so that people kind of recognize that, yes, I mean, I'm dealing with acid reflux or GERD or whatever it may be, But if I'm on these medications, then I'm 40% more likely to have, you know, a stroke or, you know, a heart attack.
Not more likely. These are actual heart attacks and strokes.
Oh, these are, okay. So this, you're 40%, you will have 40% more risk. Yeah.
No, 40% increase in actual events.
In actual, yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, this should alert the FDA to take these drugs off the market, similar to they did the Vioxx and Celebrex back in the early 2000s. There's clear evidence that this is increasing the incidence of heart attack and stroke. There should be a black box warning on these drugs. They're very dangerous and they've never been approved to use chronically.
And obviously, if you then change your diet, because a lot of times the GERD and acid reflux, you know, tends to not be due to that you have too much acid in the stomach, but it's because it's too little. And
that's right.
So if we then support the production of hydrochloric acid, then you are then less likely to deal with GERD or deal with acid reflux. And then you are less likely to have to be on these PPIs. And then you're less likely to then deal with these kind of cardiovascular events. And I mean, who wants to have a stroke? I mean, I'm okay if I just go and die and just kind of that's it. But I don't want to have a stroke and be paralyzed and be non-functional. And I mean, I just don't want to go there, you know.
Well, it's a burden on the family, right? I mean, you're putting the burden on your family, whether it's Alzheimer's or whether it's stroke. You know, you require 24-hour care many times on that. And so these are the things that we know scientifically, everything we need to know about and how to mitigate it. Now it's just getting this information into the hands of patients, into the hands of the physicians and the practitioners who are seeing these patients that can lead them in the right direction. But I can tell you what I've learned over 25 years in academic medicine is that chronic disease is caused by two things and two things only. Your body's missing something that it needs, or it's exposed to something it doesn't. So if we replete missing nutrients in the body heals itself. If there's something toxic in our body, whether it's a latent viral infection or, you know, an asymptomatic dental infection or exposure to chemical toxicants, and we remove ourselves from the source of exposure, then give the body what it needs, the body heals itself. And that's how the human body is designed to work. And in that model, there's no need or no room for drug therapy. Our body's never missing a synthetic compound that inhibits cholesterol production, right? So that's never going to make anybody better. Our body's never missing something that shuts down hydrochloric acid secretion from our parietal cells. So that's never going to make anybody better. Remove your source from toxins. Remove yourself from the source of toxins. Good nutrition to make sure you're replete in all the nutrients you need. It mobilizes our stem cells and improves nitric oxide production, and we heal ourselves.
And also, I mean, because people are thinking, well, mouthwash, you know, I don't want to have bad breath. But if your digestion is functioning appropriately, meaning that you're able to digest your food appropriately, you have the right kind of source of nutrients, you eat cleaner, and then that in itself will reduce, you know, any kind of bad breath or anything like that. But then we have the nitric oxide is antimicrobial in itself. So you're actually, by using mouthwash, you're diminishing your ability to kill off pathogens that you don't need. And you are then killing off healthy bacteria in your mouth hole. Just like if you would take antibiotics to kill it off in the gut, you're actually doing antibiotic in your mouth every day, killing off the healthy flora in the mouth.
No, spot on. I mean, you make a very good point. There's a reason that we don't take an antibiotic every day for the rest of our life, because there's clear consequences of the negative health aspects of antibiotics. So obviously, if you're sick and you have a bacterial infection, there's a known regimen that kills these. But then you get all the GI side effects from that, the diarrhea, the gastritis, and all the bad things. So similar to not taking an antibiotic every day for the rest of our life, we cannot use mouthwash to destroy the oral microbiome every day of our life. Yet many people are doing this once, twice a day. So what we've discovered is that the greater the diversity in the oral microbiome, the healthier the ecology, the healthier the systemic health. But once you disrupt that ecology and decrease the diversity of the oral microbiome, bad things start to happen. So you get bad breath. The bad guys start outnumbering the good guys. You get periodontal disease, gingivitis, and that starts this whole vicious cycle. So if you allow this ecology to just create an environment that's conducive for good bacterial growth and diversity, then the good bacteria keep the bad guys at bay. You alkalize the oral cavity, which then allows for the proliferation of the better bacteria, because most pathogens are acid-loving. When you drop the pH, then it creates an environment for the bad guys to proliferate. So it's all about maintaining the proper ecology of the oral microbiome. And the number one thing you do to disrupt that is exposure to fluoride in your toothpaste and the use of an antiseptic mouthwash.
Yeah, yeah. That that's such a huge message right there. I mean, it's just huge. So you were mentioning then, I mean, because people will wonder, you know, obviously, do I have enough nitric oxide in my system? Where am I at? And what are the appropriate measures, you know, that I need to take in order to be able to regain the amount of nitric oxide, just like you mentioned, with hormones, you check and see where are my testosterone levels, where are my estrogen, progesterone, and we know that when they are low, we just don't feel good, and then we increase them, and then all of a sudden we're happier, we have sex drive, you know, we feel stronger, we're wanting to, you know, exercise, we wanting to be engaged socially, so everything just gets better, life is just better, so it would be reason to be the same then with nitric oxide, because hormones are signaling molecules and so is nitric oxide. You know, they tell the body what to do. And so how do we then measure? You mentioned that there is a simple test that you developed where you can then find out where your level is at.
Yeah, so this is an oral nitric oxide indicator test strip. So you just apply some saliva to the end of this test strip within a matter of 3 seconds. If it turns dark pink, then that tells us your saliva is enriched in nitrite and you're able to reduce the nitrate from the bacteria. But, you know, I tell people it's a good tool to have in your toolbox, but it shouldn't be the only tool you're using because there's a number of false positives. There's no such thing as a false negative. So if you're low and you don't turn that test pad pink, then you're low. There is no such thing as a false negative. So we rely on symptoms. So I tell people, if you have an elevation of blood pressure, if your blood pressure is above, say, 130 over 80, then your body's not making nitric oxide. If you're developing any degree of sexual dysfunction in men and women, you can't make nitric oxide. If you have hyperglycemia and type 2 diabetes, your body's not making nitric oxide. If you have reduced blood flow and you're losing your memory and mild cognitive disorders, then your body's not making nitric oxide. If you get winded going up a flight of steps, then your body's not making nitric oxide. So we rely on the symptomology, but also, you know, correlating that with a saliva test strip or even some functional vascular measurements. You know, there's something called pulse wave analysis and plethysmography that you can get kind of the structure and function of the blood vessels that's really, you know, indicative of endothelial dysfunction. So there's really not a single thing that determines nitric oxide. We got to look at the whole clinical picture and correlate symptomology with some biochemical readout. And the test strip is a good indicator, but again, you have to be aware of the false positive.
And so let's say, I mean, if we deal with any of those symptoms, which obviously that's probably about 80% of anyone above 55 at least, you know, if not 90%. So if we deal with any one of those symptoms, or if we would do, you know, use the little test strips and we can get that from your company, I would assume, right?
You can get them online now. You know, I developed these in 2010. They're readily available. I abandoned the patents on these test strips because it was some old chemistry, you know, that we thought maybe we would have some value in getting a patent on kind of a method of use. But to me, it was more important to have these test strips readily available than to, you know, have patents on them and have them limited from. Mm-hmm.
And it's something that measures nitrite, you know, in the saliva.
That's right. That's a very important distinction. So nitric oxide is a gas. And once it's produced in the body, it's gone in less than a second. So we're not measuring nitric oxide gas. It's almost nearly impossible. And we can do it in the research lab, but clinically, you can't do it. Mm-hmm. So we're measuring these metabolites of nitric oxide, and what's relevant in terms of this enterosalivary circuit is salivary nitride, and that's what the test strips are measuring.
And so once we recognize that, you know, we are probably low, you know, no matter what, we should still support ourselves, even if we think we're not low, you know, even if we don't have symptoms, like we mentioned earlier, symptoms comes quite a bit later, you know, and that's right. The person has been kind of in the process of developing disease for many years until symptoms show up. But let's say we have symptoms or we test and it's low, then we should then, obviously, we should get rid of mouthwash. We should make sure that we get off any kind of acid blockers. We should change our diet to more green leafy things, you know, so we can produce more of the nitric oxide from that. And then also then you have then certain technology that will then help to improve then the release. So it's kind of like you're doing it for us.
That's
right. So tell me a little bit how what you have is different, because there's a lot of, you know, one of the products, you know, you talked about L-arginine is a common one, but then as we get older and we're not able to convert that to nitric oxide, then L-arginine is not as effective as it would be when we're younger. And then there are a lot of different beet products out there that, yeah, that talks about that it supports the production of nitric oxide. So tell us a little bit about that landscape of what is good, what is not good, and what should we look at and what should we do?
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. You know, consumers are confused because people in this space, everybody says the same thing. They can say the same thing, but yet there's very few products that actually generate nitric oxide. So as you mentioned, arginine and citrulline-based products are useless. I mean, to save your money, there's no need for that. Arginine and citrulline are produced through the urea cycle. They're semi-essential amino acids. So your body makes enough of these amino acids endogenously and from the breakdown of protein, whether it's plant proteins or animal proteins. And so you don't need it. Furthermore, it could cause more harm than benefit. There's at least two studies now that date back to 2006, where if you give an arginine to post-infarct patients, so these are people who just had a heart attack trying to restore their nitric oxide, the arginine actually led to a 50% higher mortality. So the arginine killed more people than the placebo. And then the other was in peripheral artery disease. Giving arginine to PAD patients, they actually got worse. So again, if you try to shuttle nitric oxide through a dysfunctional enzyme, you generate superoxide instead of nitric oxide. So you're exacerbating the condition. So arginine citrulline products, 30 years ago, people thought they were effective nitric oxide products. They're not only ineffective, they can be dangerous. So avoid them at all costs. The other is, you know, beet products. I've tested hundreds of beet products on the market. 99% of them do nothing. It's really a dead beet. In fact, we use these products as placebos in our clinical trials. So the beets work through their inorganic nitrate content. But again, the body can only utilize this if it has the right oral bacteria. And with 200 million Americans using mouthwash, 2 out of 3 Americans wouldn't be able to convert the nitrate from their beets or from their diet. So what we've done is completely different. So we start with technology that generates nitric oxide. So in anything we do, we kind of pre-convert that nitrate so that we're not dependent upon the oral microbiome. Because, you know, you can't be a reputable company and put a product on the market that only works in 1 out of 3 people. You know, what we do is we have product technology that works the same in every single person that ever takes it. We can quantify it. We can verify it. It's objective. So we have the form of an orally disintegrating tablet. We've got a fermented beet powder. We've taken the oxalates, the beet pulp, the beet powder out of that. So it doesn't taste like beets. It doesn't look like beets. And so it's an incredible product technology that generates nitric oxide as soon as it's dissolved in water. So that's what we do. We create product technology that generates nitric oxide gas that we can verify, that we can quantify, and it differentiates our technology from anything else on the market.
That's right. And yeah, for all the listeners, I use your products. Gonna love them. So they're great products.
Oh, thank you.
So not that you need my endorsement. I mean, all your studies, everything is enough. So how do they complement each other? Because here you have the, and it's NO2U, you know, as the one, and then the other one is called, is like Real Beats or something like that.
NO Beats, yeah,
NO Beats. NO Beats, yeah. And so how do they, I mean, do you need both? Or is if you take one, then that's enough? Or, I mean, do they function differently?
Well, they function differently. You know, the lozenge, the NO2U lozenge is designed to be kind of like your daily vitamin C, your daily vitamin D. Everything we do, everything we're exposed to in the outside environment seems to disrupt nitric oxide production. So these are meant to be a daily supplement, supplement our nitric oxide. One in the morning, one in the evening is typically sufficient. We developed the NO Beats product as a pre-workout so people that could enhance exercise performance or just as an energy product. You know, the market is saturated with things like the Monster Energy, the Red Bull, the 5-Hour Energy, these really dangerous stimulant-laced energy products that people take all the time. So we position this product as a natural energy source because it makes nitric oxide, so we're improving blood flow. We put electrolytes in there to improve cellular hydration. So rather than dehydrating you like these energy drinks, we rehydrate you. And then we put mitochondrial ATP in there, which is cellular energy. So we want to position this so that people will stop drinking the very dangerous stimulant-rich energy drinks and start getting a natural source of energy through the NO Beats. And it actually improves their health rather than destroys their health. So they're completely different. And so for me, I take them, you know, I try to work out every day and go to the gym. So I wake up in the morning, take the lozenge. I work out in the afternoon. So I'll take the Beats right as I'm going into the gym. And then at night, you know, sometimes I'll take a second lozenge, other times just one lozenge a day with the Beat powder before workout. And that seems to work really well for me. But, you know, everybody's different. The metabolic demands on each individual is different. And so, you know, it's difficult, if not impossible, to prescribe a one size fits all. And that's the beauty of the clinician using your best medical judgment on recommending what may be best for individual patients. But it's clear that you need nitric oxide. And so I recommend, you know, certainly at the minimum, one lozenge once or twice a day.
And the lozenge, it needs to be dissolved in the mouth. I mean, can it be chewed a little bit or?
We designed it to have a certain residence time. So a slow, deliberate dissolution rate. Because as this lozenge is dissolving, we're generating nitric oxide gas. And we want that gas being liberated for as long as possible. So we designed it to dissolve within 5 to 6 minutes. So you just put it in your mouth, you move it around, don't chew it, don't park it under your tongue. It's kind of like a sweet tart, just move it around. And as that matrix is falling apart, we're generating NO gas. That gas is absorbed, it's distributed systemically. We can see dilation of the blood vessels within about 12 seconds of putting it in your mouth. It's just a remarkable technology. And nothing like it on the market.
Well, and Dr. Brian, it's always a pleasure and an honor, and I'm so grateful for that you are driving this information, this vital information, so that we can shift the type of care that we offer to people so that we can be more restorative, preventive, rather than reactionary, and then, you know, using pharmaceuticals that shut down normal physiological function that will then have a cascading effect, more detrimental. You know, we need to shift the tide towards healthcare, true healthcare, rather than sick care. So thank you for playing such a huge role in that.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate you having me on, and it's an honor to know you.
Thank you.